Monday, November the 10th, 2014. I am Steve Gerwick, and today I have a very special guest. He is the whole effing show, Mr. Pay-Per-View, former WWE champion, TNA champion, of course, had that ECW television title for so long. It's a pleasure. Welcome back to Gerwick.net, my buddy RVD. How are you doing today, RVD?
I am doing excellent, just as one could imagine when they think about being RVD. It's all good.
What is RVD up to these days? I know you are keeping very busy independently, making appearance at convention shows. What's been going on with RVD lately?
Well, yeah, I keep very busy pretty much every day. You know, everyone wants to know what keeps me so busy, and that's why my fan club Tweet Secret is awesome, because I can film shit every day, and then my followers can see what it is that I'm doing, such as Friday I did stand-up comedy in Bakersfield, about 3 hours up the road, and then Saturday I did stand-up comedy here in L.A. in the Valley. It was awesome. Tori Wilson came out to see me. She brought Alicia Webb. Gangrel was there. It was a lot of fun. Been doing that lately. I'm actually tomorrow night doing stand-up comedy in Las Vegas, and I'm having a lot of fun with that. Just an outlet for expression, you know, for RVD to deliver a personal message that's not written by anybody else. And, you know, yesterday, Sunday, I usually try and make it to the beach and ride my bike. Part of the way I balance out all my energies. And in the meantime, I've got, Thursday I'm leaving and I'm going to the East Coast. And then Friday, Saturday, Sunday, I got 4 appearances, Sinemania in Philly, and then in Delaware and Maryland, I think Jersey or something. I'm going to be signing autographs at the Pro Wrestling Syndicate shows. And in between that, I have tons of projects that I'm trying to get to, but I have very little energy or time left to get to, such as writing, which is the most important thing to my heart, my passion, working on several writing projects, but also moving forward, a lot of production projects, too. This week, I have 2 documentaries that I have a meeting for in just a little while. Try to move those forward, and I got TV series meetings, and as well as internet series meetings, and that's the kind of stuff that I always do. I keep myself spread out too thin, actually, because it makes it hard to focus on stuff, but I'm always a sucker for a good idea, whether I come up with it or someone approaches me. And the one thing that people, if they really want to know what I do to relax, because I get asked that question a lot, you know, what do you do to chill, to relax? I do watch a lot of TV in between, in between being busy with work, TV.
What are you watching currently on TV?
Well, I'm a fan of, like, just about all of the series that are on HBO and Showtime, so most of those. You know, Boardwalk Empire was one of my favorites. Ray Donovan as well. I can't wait for that to come back. Newsroom just started again last night, so I love that. I love the witty, fast-paced dialogue that's in that. But my favorite show all week, I think, that I really look forward to is Shark Tank. The entrepreneurs and seeing how it all goes down and with the American dream. So if you haven't seen that, I highly recommend it.
I just might check it out based on your recommendation.
It's awesome. You see guys with people that have ideas, that have businesses that are starting out, and they need some help, and you got like 4 or 5 billionaires that may or may not invest in your product after they tear you apart and find out how much you really know about business. Awesome.
How did you get started with stand-up, and how hard is it to maybe cross over? Because a lot of people know you as RVD, the wrestler. How is it hard to transition into RVD, the stand-up comedian?
Well, what makes it easy for me is because I don't translate from RVD, the wrestler, to RVD, the stand-up comedian. I translate from RVD, the real person, being off at home, to the stand-up comedian, and that's the same person. The RVD that wrestles, that says cool and whatever, and does a Rolling Thunder, that's the character that everybody thinks that they know, but on a personal level, out of my millions and millions of fans, very few people know much about that guy at all. They'd be crushed if they knew that I didn't watch wrestling and hadn't for years and years on my TV. They don't want to know that. They want to believe that we have a lot more in common than we do, so they fill in the blanks. That's what you do with any intellectual property or image that's not a real person. You know what I mean? So that's just the way that works out. But I was always a fan, I guess, of, you know, stand-up comedy. It's always been a fun thing to go and to see the shows, and used to always think, man, sometime I'd like to get up there and do that. So when I had the opportunity and I was ready, I said, dude, I can do this. And then the other comedians would say, hey, if you want help writing shit, hey, if you want to bounce some jokes off me, whatever, I say, dude, back the fuck up. I said I can do this. You know, for me, it was about me doing it. And it's always been about the writing and then, of course, about the delivery. And I've been doing it for a few years, but not very often at all. Sometimes 6 months goes by before I get up on stage. So I'm still inexperienced enough to where I'm still improving all the time, but that's what's fun about it as an artist. You do a set, and then you see what works, what didn't. You tweak it, you try some different stuff, and I've been having a lot of fun with it, and I've come a really long way. Just the other night, it was great to hear, like, my wife's son that came out to the show. She hasn't seen me do comedy in at least a year, maybe a couple of years. And she was amazed to see how long I'd come up, because I can come across and do like a headliner, because just like something else that you have interest in, you apply your efforts towards it, you know, to improve, to get better. It was something I knew I'd be good at. I'm not looking to cross over. I'm not looking to take bookings and go to Texas and do stand-up comedy unless they're willing to pay me what I would get if I was going there to wrestle. You know, in other words, it's a passion from an artist perspective. It's not something that I've thought of as a career, but it's fun, so you never know. There's a lot of stuff that I like to do. Sometimes when I try to make it about business, it's a mistake, and then I wish I would have kept it a passion, like RVD's comic book store, which was a very big hole in my pocket, but that's the way it is. So I'm spending a little time doing the stand-up. I'll be at Bally's Casino on Tuesday tomorrow.
Cool. Now, you were talking about the writing. I assume you write most of your jokes, your material?
100%.
Wow. So is it like you just walk along one day, RVD's out and about, and he just sees something and says, hey, I'm going to make a joke out of that? Or what's kind of your inspiration for
it? Sometimes, yeah. Like, I hear things throughout the day, and it stands out in my mind. And then I'll keep a note, and I'll say, I'm going to make a joke out of that later, because I just know it's something people can relate to. My sense of humor is what other comedians call intelligent humor. So I warn the crowd of that right off the bat, and, you know, say, if you don't think my shit's funny, that's on you. I've got a dry sense of humor. I was always a big fan of, like, say, Bob Newhart and growing up, and Stephen Wright.
Right.
But yeah, like, people will say something to me. My friend Brian, he loves to say this, you can't beat that. And it's the stupidest thing to say. Hey, a hotel room for $59. You can't beat that, huh? Well, actually, a hotel room for $58 beats that. A hotel room for $57 beats that. I can't help. Like, as soon as he says it, my mind just starts doing the math. You know, I'm like, anything south of $59 beats $59. He says that every time. And when he says it, I'm like, you know what? That's going up on stage. I'm going to figure out how to deliver that. And boom, put it on my list.
So you were saying, you know, you're a big fan of television. You like a lot of television shows, probably like Netflix and video on demand content. But you're not watching wrestling, so people are going to be like, okay, you're not watching WWE, you're not watching TNA. I assume you don't have the WWE Network then.
That's correct.
Okay. Have you heard anything about it? I mean, do you have an opinion of the network, the concept of, you know,
yeah,
putting all that
I think the concept is great, and I thought, because it's such a benefit for any fans that buy two pay-per-views a year, you get so much more for the same amount of money, that I thought it was a great idea. And I thought as soon as they switched over from paying per pay-per-view to paying, you know, for the monthly subscription and getting them all, I thought, wow, it's going to go through the roof. The whole stock in the company is going to be worth 20 times what they are. I was hearing that they only needed a little over a million subscribers to break even. Everything north of that was going to be an increased revenue situation. I thought, holy shit, they're going to have 10 million. And I was very surprised to learn that they did not. Immediately, I learned it wasn't worldwide, which I thought since it was the internet that everybody would be able to do it, you know, and then I found out only in the States because there was a Major League Baseball system that they patterned after and they had to create the technology outside of the States to try to do this, so I was told. And then I was told that they did that and that they were now available in like 170 plus countries. And again, you know, I thought, well, boom, they're going to explode. And then I still think that they're going to get there much slower than anybody anticipated. But in the long run, I seriously don't think that Vince is probably too worried. He's probably on top of it, and he's probably going to come out smelling like a rose.
I just wonder, when you talk to people that watch the network, or you talk to your friends, and I think the biggest criticism of the ECW content is it's so butchered. A lot of the music is missing. Of course, your music is missing. The walk music is missing. So when we go back and for nostalgia, for the ECW fans to go back and watch that footage, it's not authentic anymore because it's been changed. They have generic music over it. And I just wonder what your thought of Vince not going out and getting the copyrights for a lot of the songs. So a lot of the music has been edited.
Yeah, I'm sure that can take away from the enjoyment for a hardcore fan. And I'm sure it's business. As far as securing the rights or not being able to, possibly, for some of the wrestlers' music, whatever goes into it, you know, I'm sure that takes away from, but at the same time, there's a lot of new generation fans that are being exposed to the 90s for the first time because of the network and, I don't know. I think it's up to the individual fan how important that stuff is. You know, I mean, from a certain perspective, you could say, well, they're kind of being picky. But I realized music was a huge part of ECW and of the whole pro wrestling industry anyway. So I get that. But as the artist, the guy in the ring, I could see looking past that.
Yeah, it's hard for me because I went to a lot of ECW. In fact, I met you at an ECW show years ago, and you know, to hear your music, the Pantera music coming out. And I guess essentially New Jack has disappeared from all the content because a lot of times New Jack would wrestle with his music playing, so they don't want to just dub over that music. They just kind of cut him out altogether, and I think it loses a lot of the old ECW flavor. Now maybe to the new fans, Rob, like you said, maybe it doesn't mean a whole lot to me, but somebody like myself, and I can see where people would say, man, this is not the same show anymore. It's not the same TV shows, not the same pay-per-views anymore, and it just kind of loses the feel of the being back at the old ECW days again.
Well, I can appreciate that, but at the same time, my understanding is that the ECW archive footage is a small part of a much bigger concept that includes a new pay-per-view every month, all the former pay-per-views, ECW, WCW, all the libraries of different wrestling organizations that they've been collecting, including some new content, new shows, original TV shows, which I haven't seen, with the Legends House and all that shit. I don't know, man. It still sounds like a good deal to me, especially if you're going to buy a couple of pay-per-views a year and spend that same money to get, 2% of what you would have got.
Yeah, I think the problem, too, is with the pay-per-views is I don't think the pay-per-views mean as much as they used to back in the day. Obviously, Vince runs the wrestling world. TNA has really not made an impact on the wrestling business. Thus, I don't know if the pay-per-views today really translate into like must-buy, must-see. So even if you're offering the pay-per-views for $9.99, and I don't know if you realize that this month, Rob, they're offering the month of November for free, which includes the Survivor Series, as trying to get people hooked. But I just think the pay-per-views over the year have really lost a lot of their luster.
Well, I can take that thought a step further. I've been saying this for years, and I don't hear too many other wrestlers, if any, say this. And maybe they don't agree with me, but I feel like what you're saying about the pay-per-views losing their punch, I feel like the whole weekly TV show has done the same, because when I grew up watching wrestling, we had the Day of the Jobber, the enhancement matches, and you would watch Big John Studd take on two wrestlers at the same time. You didn't know who these guys were, and you knew Big John Studd was going to win, most likely, but it was great just to see him display what he's got. He's a freak. He's a circus act. Look how big he is. Holy crap. He's slamming both those guys. That guy, the other guy, he beats them, and then you find out on Saturday night's main event, he's going to be wrestling Hulk Hogan. What? What? Big John Studd versus Hulk Hogan? There's no way I can miss that. There was so much appeal and draw. Then during the Monday Night Wars, they got rid of the enhancement matches, and every single match from the bottom of the card up on TV and at the house shows too, live events for that matter, has to be superstar versus superstar. Superstar versus superstar. That means that one of your guys that you're trying to push has got to go under. You got to find some creative way to write it, to screw somebody over and try to do it in a way that, you know, where you can keep your steam going. And there's just so much bullshit that I think is unnecessary, because why would you be excited about a pay-per-view? Why would you be excited about any big match with where the whole build-up to it is just left to how creative these barely out of high school kids can write the angle going into it. It used to be that the angle was, this guy's going to wrestle this guy. Holy crap, who could win out of that? What could come out of this match? So I don't know why the Monday Night Wars are over. You know, WWE is the only group there is, the only surviving organization at the top. So why do they need to keep at that competitive level that started the whole superstar versus superstar, you know, approach? Because now that he's the only show in town, he could easily scale back and he could display the talents of the superstars that he really wants to push with great exhibitions of them doing all their great stuff and coming out looking indestructible. Why do I, as a babyface, have to cry every single match? Why? Why does it got to go through that? Why not sometimes I'm out there for 3 minutes just bam, bam, bam. That's when I get creative and inspired. And I'll pull out a new move. I'll pull out a move you haven't seen or I haven't seen me do in like 8 years. I'll just pull it out, bam. And then I'll add a new twist to it. Boom. Why? Because that's what I'm doing, is I'm out here showing off. I'm trying to show you all the different moves I got and why you should believe in me when I'm going up against this other guy at a special match coming up. But if you've seen us wrestle 2-3 times every week for the last 4 weeks, I just don't see, you know, where as much interest is going to be put into that matchup.
I think that's well said. The pacing of the 3 hour, I was watching Raw the other day. It feels like it's in slow motion. It's just like there's no flow to the show. There's nothing that really grabs you. And like you said, with the jobber matches, the enhancement guys, I guess to be politically correct anymore, yeah, why don't we go back and have jobber matches, have enhancement talent that can make a guy look like a star?
Dude, I would like nothing more than to, you know, throw a jobber into the corner and do a spinning double leg lariat, bam, and pull him right over the top rope, you know, and do the corkscrew leg drop on the guardrail, bam, throw him over the guardrail, jump up, do a springboard helo off the guardrail into the crowd, boom, just like in the old ECW days. But I'm not going to really get that in when I have a 3-minute match against Roman Reigns or something, for instance. So I really think that they're missing the boat, unless all the other boys just really don't have that much to show and they have to hide it by putting them in these you know, real important matches from the bottom up. I don't see it, though. I would do things different. But then again, you know, that's just my opinion. I'm not trying to say that I could run a successful global enterprise and make a profit. You know, like let's put that out on the table as well.
Yeah, you know, I've had this debate a lot with fans, with my partner here, Frank D, on the podcast, and it's always about when is the next wrestling boom. And I don't see a wrestling boom anytime soon. And I think one of the major problems is Rob, that, you know, back in the day, you would see Mr. Perfect come from AWA. You would see somebody come from the NWA. You see somebody come from Calgary, from Florida, Central States. And now Vince runs everything. He runs the show. He's been very reluctant about taking in TNA talent, to a certain degree, even Ring of Honor talent. He's got some Ring of Honor guys, of course, CM Punk, Daniel Bryan, etc. But when a lot of the guys back in the 80s and 90s came on the scene, they were all over the world. They had different styles. They worked different styles. The fans were really into them, different crowds. And I don't know, Rob, in my personal opinion, with WWE running developmental, the NXT, and that's all they have, I just don't think they're going to make new stars the same way they did in the past.
At the same time, it should be pointed out that the caliber of wrestler right now in WWE is at an all-time high from in my career. And you might not notice it as a fan. I don't know, but being in there, in the ring with these guys, they know what they're doing. They've been working 4 years. They come across like 10-year veterans. And it's because half of the dressing room is second or third generation. I counted 17 different families while I was there, and I used to wrestle their dads, you know what I mean? And then the other half right. has to keep up with them, and they have that NXT training, and it's really made a much better wrestler. When you say it's in slow motion, I got to ask you to think back a few years. You know, a lot of people, you know, think, oh, man, WWE in its heyday, the Attitude Era, that's when it was the shit, man, they've lost a lot. Okay, compare a match with, say you watch Seth Rollins versus Dean Ambrose. Compare that to a match when I was there before in 2000 and, I don't know, say five, when you got Luther Reigns, you know, versus whoever, versus a vampire dude. And you had Gene Snitsky versus whoever. The whole style was so much different. A lot of guys that were getting pushed back then would not know how to fit in within today's style. I knew that Batista was going to have to make some adjustments, and he was going to be surprised because he just represented that era back then. And he's the kind of guy that, like, at the ECW arena, they would even boo him because of that, because of what he stood for and how they felt about that. But he came back recently, as we all saw, and I knew, like, he was coming from a different time era. I was able to adapt, and I've always been ahead of my time, and that's made it much easier for me. Batista's much better than people give him credit for, but I just use him as a reference that I know you can relate to and remember because it just happened. But if you think back, there was a lot of guys between when I was there from 2001 up that, you know, they had acquired WCW. They had a bunch of green kids. They were trying to place everybody. They acquired ECW as well. We would have meetings where I felt like it was like wrestling school all over again. Here I've been in the business 10, 12 years, and it's mandatory that I attend this meeting where Johnny Ace is trying to teach everybody how to sell with their face pointed towards the people. I was like, dude, do I have to be here? But that's how it was. You know, it was like this influx of all these Stasiak and Jindrak and, you know, all those guys. And some of them came out and blew up, you know, and went to the top from that. You know, that's where Brock came from, Bobby Lashley. And then other guys, you know, they didn't go anywhere. And I understand why that happened also.
I don't really have a problem with the wrestling. I don't knock the wrestling per se. It's just the character development is lacking. The storylines are lacking. And of course, you know, it's a PG era. So we don't have the more edgy characters and storylines. Do you feel like the PG era, the toning everything down, we don't say certain words, we don't emphasize the women, or they're very much covered up, that going from the Attitude Era to today, that there is a big drop off in the product because it just doesn't seem as exciting as it did back in, you know, 1999, for example?
Yeah, well, I think that we're all drawn towards different things. You know what I mean? Like, I've personally always hated the storylines, being the guy involved in it. You know, like, as a fan, I dug it. When I was a kid, I remember the first time I watched wrestling, reluctantly, I was hooked. I saw Corporal Kirshner get attacked by Iron Sheik. I was like, what? and he's got him next week. Oh, I'm going to be right back here next week. He owes him. I want to see him get his. But being a wrestler throughout my whole career, the storylines for me has always been like, oh, God, okay. And I realized that it draws a lot of the fans. It just hasn't been my favorite part. Never has. Even the interviews, you know, like I had a lot of fun doing the interviews in ECW when I had a lot of freedom to express the character that I wanted to express. But still, it's always been about getting in the ring and showing off for me. So, you know, now WWE is targeting, more children than adults. And that's because they have sponsors paying big money, and I totally get that. And there's going to be some people disappointed. Hey, I'm an adult, and I'm entertained by adult entertainment. You know, I've been very upfront, about that. Always, for my whole career, I use adult language because I'm an adult, and I'm drawn to that. I'm a comic book fan, and I learned that the comic book titles that were made for the mature read, they used adult language. Maybe there's a boobie in there. There's some more violence, you know, murders and stuff. For me, I'm drawn more towards that, so I get it. But pro wrestling is very objective. And it's subjective to who's watching it. And, you know, there's always going to be some people that complain while other people are happy. And right now I think the parents appreciate everything that you're complaining about.
Yeah, for sure. And I don't know, they cater to the younger fan, obviously 13, 14-year-old boy. But at the same time, you know, that 13, 14-year-old boy is playing Grand Theft Auto and he's watching violent things on Netflix. And as you said, he might see a boobie or he might hear a bad word. And it just seems like it's so scaled down for a particular audience, and yet that audience is exposed to other things that may seem more real to them than wrestling right now.
I'm sure they have big meetings with long tables and a bunch of suit and tie wearing motherfuckers that approach these subjects with all kinds of studies and analytics and trying to figure out, this is what we got. How do we grow from here? We got to target places where we're weak. We got to reinforce places where we're strong. A lot goes into stuff like that, and that's the business end of it that the fans don't even want to think about.
Yeah, we just talked to D'Lo Brown, and he had a good quote. He just said, "There's nothing PG about two guys wanting to kick each other's ass," and I kind of agree with that, Rob. I know he's catering to the younger crowd, and he's catering to his business partners and sponsors, but I mean, if you really think about it, especially with MMA out there, UFC, there's nothing PG about two guys wanting to beat each other up. that's what it comes down to.
Well, that's definitely one way of looking at it. You know, wrestling is an art. I've always said it's a fighting art, and I say that from the perspective of somebody who's been involved in many different fighting arts, and they're all legit. They're all they all qualify as art, and I'm also someone that, as an artist in this manner, I've learned there's a lot of factors involved. You know, yeah, I'm going to beat somebody up, but I'm going to do it in such a way that amazes the fans. Makes them favor me over the other guys that are beating guys up. It has a lot to do with my moves. It has a lot to do with my attitude, how cool I am while I'm doing it. How much punishment I can take, because that makes them care. That makes them invest their emotions and wanting to see me come around. There's so much involved in it. And, it's enjoyable. And a lot of times the fans feel certain ways and they don't even know why they feel that way. Why does the fan not give a shit that this other guy did every single move in the book in his match? Because he didn't know what he's doing. He's even doing all the moves, but it's obviously not just about that. They're not investing their emotions. They don't care about him, and why should they? And there's a lot to it. There's a lot to approach getting in the ring, making a good match, sticking out, getting ahead as a career in professional wrestling. So having gone through that, you know, I understand it in a different manner than a lot of people, but a lot of it has to do with inflicting emotions in people without them having to worry too much about why they feel that way. They're there to have a good time. You know, make somebody laugh, they laugh. They don't want to concentrate and break down the science of what made them laugh. Same thing with wrestling, same thing with anything. All entertainers are show-offs. There's probably some exceptions to that, but that's the way I see it. I'm definitely in the business just to get out there and show off, and that doesn't include me watching other guys, so it's the last thing on my priority. Whenever there's anything else, and there always is something else better to watch on my TV.
Exactly. What is your WWE status, and is there a chance we're going to see Rob Van Dam at WrestleMania 31?
There's a chance. There's definitely no plans of it right now. I have an ongoing relationship with WWE. I come and go with short-term contracts. When my contract runs out, there's no obligations. I'm completely done. I'm off, and that will remain the same condition until I'm ready to go back, and then pick up the phone and call them and say, hey, you know, what do you think about these months coming up here? I was thinking about doing from here to here, blah, 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 and start the conversation. So it's possible, you know, it's a likely scenario, but I actually am not holding back any inside information. I haven't talked to them since I left in August 26th.
Now, you have kind of this working relationship where you can come and go. Chris Jericho does as well because he obviously travels around with Fozzy. There was reports that Kurt Angle wanted a similar deal, and yet they wanted him to work a full-time schedule. Don't you think WWE should maybe look at bringing back Kurt Angle and maybe giving him an option like you guys have to come and go as you please?
Well, it certainly seems like he or Jeff Hardy would qualify to have a schedule like Chris Jericho and I. You know, I went my whole career without seasons, always saying, man, why do you got to always be on the road? And, you know, how can you got to be on TV every single week? So having reached the status that Jericho and I have to have this deal, I feel, you know, like it's a privilege that I earned. I see Kurt Angle as Jeff Hardy also being able to help out the company in the same way, lending a hand, lending their name, their experience with the current roster the same way that we do. But what I don't know is the business of Kurt Angle. You know what I mean? He definitely has a different relationship with Vince McMahon. You know, there's Kurt, I think they wrestled on an airplane one time or something. I'm sure that they know each other way different than anybody at WWE knows me. Nobody really knows me that well as long as I've been there. They kind of know the character more, and that's just the way it is. So having said that, I have no idea why they would see Kurt as being more beneficial as being there for the full year, but, you know, why speculate and guess at the reasons?
Exactly. Now, obviously, we're seeing more of a power shift from Vince McMahon, who's always been, you know, front and center. He's the CEO, he's the chairman, and we're hearing more and more that Triple H and Stephanie are getting involved in the company, having more involved in the creative process, making decisions. Does that change your relationship with WWE over the years, or what do you think of Triple H and Stephanie getting more power in WWE?
Well, I thought the sound of it was tragic. You know, I remember I left WWE in 2006, and a lot of why I left it was because of the monotonous schedule and also just a lot of the politics chewed up, you know, any passion, and I kind of stayed there as long as I could for just being business without having a lot of heart to push me through. I had to go. I left. And then people are telling me Triple H and Stephanie are running it now. Things are so much better. You got to come back. And I couldn't believe what I was hearing because that sounded like such a ridiculous statement. You know, how, what do you mean it's better with Triple H running it? Because before, he was in a position where he received a lot of blame from the boys about the way that things were. And you know, when he was wrestling, there were a lot of conditions that probably could be attributed to him. It's way different now, and I don't know if it's better or not, and I'm not even trying to express that. I'm just saying it's different. Back in the day, Hunter would have meetings and he would preach to everybody, you gotta want this more than anything in your life. Anything. You gotta be ready to die to be a wrestler. You got to eat, sleep, and breathe this. And that's the way it was when I got into the business. It was like that. Hunter was still enforcing that. He was enforcing it from the position of being the top guy there, the guy running meetings, the guy, and it scared a lot of people. A lot of people were afraid for their jobs. They were walking on eggshells. It was real tense. That's the way I remember it back in the day, especially when we're like overseas and we're all trapped together on a bus or on an airplane for many hours. People were afraid to say the wrong thing, and really, you weren't allowed to be comfortable unless you earned it, which took a lot of years of experience, you know, in order to earn it. So when I heard, you know, they were taking over, I just thought it would be worse. But I found when I came back, things are better in that way. The conditions of the dressing room are so much different. I can't believe it. Everybody there seems to love each other. They seem to have all, like, gone to school with each other and come up together. And that's the way that I saw WWE when I came back last year, when I came to the dressing room. They all seem to get along and love each other so much. And when I tell them how it used to be when it was so intense there, they can't believe it. All the young guys, when they hear me telling them, they're like, oh, my God, that sounds horrible. And now I have heard some wrestlers say they see it the opposite way now. But from my perspective, that's exactly how it is now. Things are cool. Hunter is stepped back from being one of the talents. You know, maybe he felt threatened, it seems like it, back in the day when other people were getting over and it was inconsistent with his agenda. Now, maybe a little less. Mostly all I hear from him is, hey, Rob, everything okay? You need anything? So he's been super cool. Vince has been cool. They all have made me feel like they appreciate me being there, which is way different than it used to be, and it's rewarding.
Now, my partner on the Gorick Report podcast, Frank D., wants to know, why wasn't Bill Alfonso brought into WWF in 2001 with you at that time?
Well, he's got his own history working with WWF. He used to referee there years ago, and he used to be like the handler for El Gigante. And got many stories involving those, but he got himself into some kind of a predicament that led to him not working for them back in the past. And one would assume that because of the history that he had, that was probably a factor in him returning.
I guess the big question about TNA is, you know, what happened with TNA? Why didn't TNA really get over? Why didn't it make the impact on the industry that a lot of people wanted? Why wasn't really the alternative? I mean, they had Sting and they had Hogan, they had Flair, Savage, Booker T, Nash, you obviously, Scott Steiner, and yet didn't seem like they ever really found a niche with with the wrestling population. I mean, why didn't TNA really ever get over with the fans?
Possibly it's because they also had Vince Russo.
Ah.
When I was there, and Vince Russo told me they wanted to turn Jeff Hardy heel, I thought that was the stupidest thing I ever heard of. And it didn't work. The fans love Jeff Hardy. And we're at Universal Studios, where they funnel the crowd in from the park. It's filled with kids. So like you've talked about with WWE, we had to watch our language, everything. And then you got their favorite wrestler, Jeff Hardy, out there spitting at the crowd, trying to get them to boo him. I just thought that was bad business. I thought a lot of things they did was ridiculous. They had, when they saw that they had used up all the dates that I was committed to, before the end of the year, because I had so many dates per year on a 3-year contract, they filleted me open. The Abyss had, and it's 2x4 with nails, Janice, filleted me open. I think you might have even seen like ribs laying out on the floor to give me a couple months off for the rest of the year. And then when my dates renewed again, I came back with no scars or anything. You know, I mean, I personally, you know, saw like a lot of things, whether it was direction of RVD or even with the rest of the dressing room, that I thought came across very amateurish. There's only one WWE, you know what I mean? And we did all want to see TNA come up and be competition. You know, when I joined, we were actually going head to head on Monday night. Would have maybe been cool. It would have maybe been cool, but I enjoyed my time in TNA. I enjoyed the schedule. It was much easier just going to the studios. And at first, I would just take a direct flight. I'd go there for 2 days, ride the Spider-Man ride, hang out, come back home for 2 weeks. That was awesome. Maybe the best deal of my whole career. But eventually, my contract came up, and I was going to renew. I actually talked with TNA about signing a new contract, and we had every factor of the contract worked out except for a starting date. And they were dragging their feet, and it got to a point where I was offended, and I felt like, you know what, fuck these guys, they're not going to even call me back. And so that's when I went to the Hall of Fame to see my boy Booker T get inducted. And then, you know, rumors went out that RVD was back with WWE, which I ended up starting like the day after WrestleMania, because I, no, that was this year, actually. Last year it was Money in the Bank. But anyway, it led to me going back to WWE. No regrets, by the way, out of my whole entire career. Every decision that I've made has been a good one from my perspective. And I've left every group on my own accord after 1991. The first territory where I actually was on the road wrestling with a weekly loop was USWA, Jeff Jarrett's daddy's promotion. And after like 5 weeks, me, Sabu, two or three other guys that we were with, they said, all right, you know, we don't really have anything else for you. And that was it. After that, I walked out of everywhere on my own. WCW, All Japan, ECW, WWF, WWE. I left there twice. And then, you know, it's always been good. This thing with TNA, I would have gone back. But, you know, I'm glad that it didn't work out that way, because right away, when I walk out to the WWE arena and I look in the stands, and there's like three levels of just thousands and thousands of fans, I was like, oh my God, this is so much better than having 900 people filling up the bottom rows of the arena, because that's how it was with TNA, and they really did not seem to want it to grow past that. There were so many things they did that made me feel like they were complacent.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you. I mean, you go right on television, and suddenly, you know, you're the big star again. And I'm sure you probably got it when you were in TNA, when you would travel around, they probably say, Rob, you know, why don't you wrestle anymore?
That happened a lot. Yeah. And every town that I was in, I'd be in the gym, and they'd say, RVD, what are you doing here? I'd say, oh, great. You know, there's a TNA show across the street at the Civic Center. What? Yeah, that happened a lot.
What was the bigger problem in TNA, Dixie Carter or Vince Russo?
Well, I guess, you know, if you're not passing the buck and you're really investigating it, I guess you got to take it to the top. And Dixie, sweetheart of a lady, I love her, really enjoyed working with her. She is too trusting, and that's the problem, the way that I see it. She loves the business. She wants to make it a go. She wants the boys to be happy. But she trusts and delegates most of the decisions. It was Vince Russo, and then it was Bruce Pritchard, and then people were talking about it's a combination of the writers. Half the time, nobody knew who was in charge. I remember one time when Sabu was there, and he wanted to talk to whoever was in charge, and he went to, who did he start with? I think he went to Vince Russo and said, hey, who's in charge here? And Vince Russo said, talk to Bischoff. And he went to Bischoff. He said, hey, who's in charge here? And Bischoff said, hey, talk to Hogan. Hogan, hey, who's in charge here? Hogan said, I don't know, talk to Dixie. And so that's the way that it was for a while there. And I mean, you know, it's quite possible that there was some people there that were just taking a paycheck, and why not? Great business opportunity for them. But no matter what problems you address, if you go straight up to the top, and in Dixie having the ultimate decision-making power, you know, she would have to do things different. She would have to have people underneath her, and that's got to be her call to hire those people. So, you know, in an indirect way, I'm gonna have to say that for things to turn around, it would have had to have come from the top.
Real quickly, do you think TNA survives, or do you think this is the end of the line for the company?
I hate to say, I don't want to put that negative energy out there, and I really only hear bits and pieces of rumors. You know, the whole time I was there, they kept saying it was going to close. I joined in 2010, and people were like, dude, no, seriously, it's fact. In October, their contract runs out with Spike. They're not going to renew. They're finished, dude. I'm just letting you know it didn't happen, you know, and every year they would say that. So if they want to keep going, I think in some shape or another, they'll keep going.
And as we wrap with you, go ahead and plug your social media. I know you're on Twitter, Facebook. Are you on Instagram? And where can fans see you coming up in the future? Any other dates you want to plug?
Yeah, so that's all. All of that is at the Real RVD, including my YouTube page, which I'm going to start spending more attention to. So I had a fan club, and it's tweetsecret.com/Rob Van Dam. I shoot videos about every day. Sometimes yesterday I actually posted 3 videos, and a lot of it is me at work doing gigs. I have 3 stand-up comedy gigs this week. I have 4 autograph appearances also this weekend. And I have a lot of business, Hollywood meetings, stuff like that. And I have recreational stuff, you know, riding my bike at the beach, working out in my gym, which only prospectively is recreational because it's all about business for me. But anyway, my fan club keeps me connected to the fans in like the utmost biggest way possible. I can record a video and then send it and then post it, and instantly, like while I'm on the drive to the beach, like the fans that get this exclusive information, they know exactly what I'm doing. I'm riding to the beach, and I have other celebrities all the time, you know, like in my videos, and I go in the dressing room, like towards the end of my WWE run there, you could see me going through all my emotionals of being burnt out. There'd be times, you know, when I'm happy and I got videos where, hey, Dolph Lund, hey, you know, what's up, Dolph Ziggler, or hey, Chris Jericho, what's up, man? Hey, is that Tweet Secret? Yeah, man, you do it too. He's got Tweet Secret. And there's other times where I'm so burnt out and I'm so frustrated, I don't even bother to take a shower and change my clothes. I'm in my RVD gear, storming out to the car, and I'm shooting a video going, let's get the fuck out of here. And so it's really cool to capture all that real life direct from me to the fans. I'm the camera guy, I'm the writer, I'm the editor, everything. It's all me. And I have a lot of fun with it. I make masterpieces, and I answer my fans' questions too when they send on Twitter, and I follow my Twitter fans on there because I don't follow them otherwise, because dude, I got a couple thousand people I follow, and after a while I realized everyone I follow is just going to send me a direct message to follow all their friends. And I don't believe people when they tell me it's their birthday either. Can I get a retweet for my birthday? I don't believe them. But if you follow me, if you're one of my exclusive Tweet Secret followers, then I know it's legit because we get that info. So that keeps everybody up to date with everything that I'm doing. And I try to use robvandam.com as a hub so you can get all my social media from there.
Are you still doing RVD Radio?
I'm not doing RVD Radio. I do a live web show on Wednesdays in its place called RVD Live at Be Real TV. It's BeReal.tv. Be Real from Cypress Hill. I do it at his studios downtown L.A. I won't be doing a show this week because I'll be in Las Vegas, but I'll be back next week. But if you go to Be Real TV, you can check out what we do. And, of course, my show is one of a kind. It's not like anybody else's show. We actually watch news clips and then talk about it and make watch the news fun and educate the fans on some stories that they might be missing out on. So I do that. Dude, I got RVD t-shirts up at ProWrestlingTees.com. Look up Nonconformity Clothing and you'll see a side project I got for my one-of-a-kinders out there that want to celebrate their individuality. That's something. I got my comic book, Twisted Perception. I got my eBay store. I got too much going on all the time. So I try to use robvandam.com to try to lunk it all together in one place to make it easy for everybody.
Well, Rob's always been accessible to me. We've done a couple interviews now. Always enjoyed catching up with him and picking his brain, getting his perspective on things. Rob, we wish you nothing but the best of luck, and we'll talk again real soon.
Okay, cool. Thanks, Steve.